Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Friday, April the 11th. It's 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock. It's time for the Week in Review, when we talk with two guests from different perspectives about the political news of the week. And we welcome your input, too, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're going to start with the testimony before Congress this week of the top commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus.
Since Ambassador Crocker and I appeared before you 7 months ago, there has been significant but uneven security progress in Iraq. Since September, levels of violence and civilian deaths have been reduced substantially. Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and a number of other extremist elements have been dealt serious blows. The capabilities of Iraqi security force elements have grown, and there has been noteworthy involvement of local Iraqis in local security. Nonetheless, the situation in certain areas is still unsatisfactory, and innumerable challenges remain. Moreover, as events in the past 2 weeks have reminded us, and as I have repeatedly cautioned, the progress made since last spring is fragile and reversible. Still, security in Iraq is better than it was when Ambassador Crocker and I reported to you last September, and it is significantly better than it was 15 months ago when Iraq was on the brink of civil war and the decision was made to deploy additional forces to Iraq.
And President Bush, yesterday, going along with the recommendation of General David Petraeus and ordering a halt in U.S. troop withdrawals from Iraq after July. What do we think of this? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We'll see what our guests think. We have with us Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
And Kathy Stepp, former Republican state senator. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do we think, Louis Fortas, of the testimony of David Petraeus, General Petraeus, about the situation in Iraq?
Well, I think that he's accurate that the violence has gone down, the death rate has gone down, which is, you know, great, of course. I think it's part of it because we had a stronger show of force, and also you know, it gets to a point where there just gets to be fatigue on the part of the Iraqis or whatever population that's at war. We saw that in the former Yugoslavia, where Holbrooke and company couldn't get any kind of deal, a Dayton Accords, until basically they got tired of fighting, or at least they slowed down the fighting. So I think there's a little fatigue on the part of the Iraqis, and they're just getting tired of the fighting. I think that the show of force is helping. But the main thing is this, is it's one thing to dampen down the violence, which, of course, is necessary. But the big issue is, does it lead to what we want is a stable political system? And there's been very little progress in that direction. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we can hold down the violence, which is, you know, necessary, but it's not sufficient. We need the next step, and that's not going to happen as long as we're the ones holding down the violence.
Yeah. Kathy Stepp?
Well, I agree in part to what Louis just said. You know, I think the overall message from the general was that the benchmarks that have been set to show progress in unbelievably challenging undertaking, which is, you know, trying to restore some peace there, many of those are being met, and I think those are good signs, and that we should all rejoice in that. I think it's difficult politically for some of the Democrat presidential candidates to, you know, try and differentiate and stuff their base during this primary season about the pullout. And yet we're seeing that, like Louis just said, that the surge has actually helped restore some order. And, you know, we really are seeing some significant improvements. I mean, the businesses are opening up again in Iraq. There is much more civil order than what there's been in a long time. I think people are starting to trust that there's some peace that actually could be in their future for the first time in generations. So I think that's really important, and it's something really the world should rejoice about.
Yeah. Louis, what about this this pause in U.S. troop withdrawals from Iraq after July?
Well, I think what's happened is George Bush's, I mean, his way of getting out of Iraq is getting out of office and leaving it for the next person. I think that's what's basically going on. Come July, he's basically just stepping back, and it'll continue at the current levels, and whoever gets elected president is going to be in their lap.
Yeah, that's right, Kathy Stepp.
Well, of course it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is leaving office. It's the end of his term. It's not as if Lewis, he's voluntarily going, I'm out of here, I've had enough of this. I mean, yeah, we're winding down now in the second of his terms, and of course that's how it's going to be. But, you know, it's been really the goal of this president and his administration is to try and make significant improvements in that part of the world and, you know, to put it on track to be something that the next president won't have to deal with, the horrors that hopefully that George Bush had to deal with, September 11th for one of the examples. So mm-hmm. I think we've really come a long way, and I you know, it's politically difficult sometimes as it is for people to say. I think that this administration, when we look back historically, it's going to be shown that there are significant changes made in that part of the world. And I appreciate that as somebody who's worried about the national security for my kids.
I can't agree with Kathy. I disagree with Kathy more. I think that we are more in a more dangerous situation today than we were when George Bush came into office. We have alienated and angered, and you know, if you look at the polling that takes place in worldwide, where they say, "What's your impression of the United States?" It has just tanked. People are angry. People are upset, and it's going to, whoever gets elected in November is going to have a big job of just trying to repair this damage that was done by this administration. The arrogance, the bravado, the cowboy mentality has really hurt United States, and it's really sad.
Yeah, Lewis, you know what? I just have to laugh a little bit about that, not to laugh at you, but just at some of the talking points about the cowboy thing, is that, you know, how much more could they hate us now than when they came September 11th? And how much more could they have hated us to, you know, attack our embassies around the world over the last 15, 20 years? There was a lot of hatred going on towards this country. And the reality is this. There are a significant group of people in a sector that really hate and despise our way of living, and they want us destroyed. They see us as evil, and you really can't hate much more than that. So to say that George Bush is the cause for people hating us is ridiculous.
That's been going on for
15 to 20 years. Now, where this particular group of people wants to destroy us, and thank God we had someone who's willing to step up and defend us against that.
Okay,
thank God.
That's not what I said. First
that's
of all,
how I heard ya.
then either well. Okay, to say the situation that what I did say.
Kathy,
what
let Lewis say what he said.
Sure.
What I did say was that that we're in a more dangerous situation. Of course, there were people that hated us beforehand. The problem is, there's a lot more now. And the thing that I have done a lot of international work for the U.S. government, international AID, the International Development Agency, and people, you know, the average person in all these various countries, Mongolia, Uganda. I mean, they love us. I mean, they see a lot of our positive virtues. I think, sure, there's a group of people that hated us and that attacked our country, but now with the way we acted and the way we responded by attacking a different country, I'm going to Afghanistan, everyone I think supported that. When you then pick another country like Iraq and attack that, that's when I think people really began to get upset. And for you to be saying that, you know, President Bush did all this wonderful stuff. Kathy, that's not the reality.
Yeah, well, you know, the reality is this, that we haven't had an attack on this nation's soil since that day. And, you know, to say that, you know, the way he responded was wrong, I guess I always like to challenge the critics and say, what should he have done? Should he have hid underneath his desk and wrung his hands and said, oh, no, now what? Or should we have responded back with force? And that's what we needed to do in order to establish that we're not going to support governments that support terrorism. And clearly, that's what Saddam Hussein was doing with supporting terrorism. Everybody knows that. And we could spend 6 hours, Joy, on your show going back and rehashing Iraq war. And I know we don't have time, but I just get a little bit, you know, annoyed at some of those blanket statements that are out there. And it's unfair.
Yeah.
I mean, to say he did things wrong. Well, sure.
But he did.
Well, you can go back and always correct wartime decisions.
He attacked the wrong country. When he went to Afghanistan, that was right.
Goodness.
When he went into Iraq, that was wrong. And you mean you can fantasize about how
forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's get back to the news of the week this week. And Keith in Shorewood is with us. Hi, Keith.
Hi. Good morning, Joy, Kathy, and Lou. Boy, this is a fun conversation this morning already. I tell you what, I've got a big problem, Kathy, with the cavalier way in which a lot of people regard this war in the Bush administration and among their supporters. As somebody who's in business, I know that when we launch off after a project, we have a clear idea of what we're looking to do and what we're looking to accomplish and what it's going to take to complete the project. That's not the case with Iraq. We have no idea of you keep talking about victory, but there's never been a clear definition of what victory is. We could do this in a business-like manner, define it, set milestones, be very transparent about what the milestones are. When you look at the $12 billion a month that we're spending in Iraq, that's a tremendous opportunity cost that we're losing to this country by money being spent. And in terms of being safer, the reports on terrorism around the world show that the level of terrorism keeps going up.
Yeah. Let me bring this right back to the testimony. And Kathy Stepp, we did have Barack Obama at the end of the hearing on Tuesday really trying to get General Petraeus to tell us what success would be. We didn't really get a clear answer of what success would be in Iraq. Do you have a sense?
Well, you know, I just want to turn that around and say to Senator Obama, with his, you know, apparent decades of experience on foreign policy, is what is his definition of success? Because assuming that he's the nominee going forward, what is he going to define that as? Is that going to be a pullout and to run back and hide and pretend as if that's going to be a good decision to make because it happens to be politically popular with his base? I find that fundamentally irresponsible. If someone's running for the nation's top job and really leader of the free world, you have to be a deeper thinker than that. And never did I say that we've had victory yet, but there have been benchmarks set. So to the caller's point that, you know, there hasn't been a business plan, so to speak, there is one right now. We've got benchmarks that are being met, and they're reporting back on those benchmarks. There are some that aren't being met. But this is like any big business project, if you will. It's an ongoing thing that we have to keep monitoring and changing our plan as situations changed. Mm-hmm. And really, in fairness, we've never, ever faced an enemy like this before. This is completely new. And, of course, there are going to be mistakes that are made along the way. And I'm not going to sit here and defend George Bush in those regards because he's a big boy. He can do that for himself. But what I am saying is that, in fairness, to sit back and say it's like a business plan when we're facing these kind of terrorists who want to murder us, I just think that's a bit unfair.
Okay, wait a second. There's a couple things going on. Kathy's language is part of the problem. The situation is either going to go there and fight and destroy whatever you can, or you run and hide is the other. This thing called diplomacy. There's things about where we talk and we say that's how all agreements are settled, and that is with diplomacy. And you know, this you're chuckling in the background is rude starting.
I don't mean to be rude, Louis. But wait a second, Kathy.
I mean, the thing is, okay, I don't know how much you've worked overseas or anything like that, but it's more complicated than you or George Bush have made it. And when we were attacked, that was a terrible tragedy. We did go after Afghanistan, which was the correct thing to do. And then we abandoned, for all intents and purposes, Afghanistan. The Taliban strengthened themselves. They stepped back, they regrouped, and they strengthened themselves. And we were spending our time going after somebody where Al-Qaeda, which had no connection, and even the Bush administration finally admits that there was no connection with Al-Qaeda. So, Kathy, you're just wrong, and Bush is wrong, and let's move on.
Well, that's what I was trying to do, Louis. What is the definition of success? Let's not debate the beginning of the war. Let's talk about the end of the war and what they're talking about in the hearing this week. Did you get a clear sense as to when there would be success in Iraq?
It's going to come down to a political settlement. It's going to come down to a situation. You know, one thing that no one talks about, and this is a kind of an odd thing, is that you always worry about, in a developing country, you always worry about political parties becoming either tribal or religious factions, and that's it. What's going on now is you have Shia against Shia fighting, which, as terrible as that is, it's showing that they're not one solid block, and then that there is some hope for some plurality in different political parties that may, you know, be a mixture of Shia and Sunni and whatever. And that's what we really want. You want, if you're going to totally disrupt the country as we did, I think we need now to work and try to develop a civil society, a political solution, and political parties. It's not easy. It's extraordinarily complex. It may not work, but that's what we have to be doing.
Do you think, Lewis Butler, that I'm sorry. Oh, God, I was just talking about Lewis Butler in my last
and a good
hour.
A good fellow he is, and I don't mind being compared to Lewis. He's a good fellow.
We'll talk about the Supreme Court stuff later. But what about John McCain during the hearings this week? He was confusing once again Al-Qaeda, Shia, and Sunni. Do you think that's just a slip of the tongue, or do you think that says something more?
I'm not in a position to kind of analyze, you know, what's going on in John McCain's head in that way, but it does make you a little nervous when someone who is claiming to have all this foreign policy experience and being the big expert, you can spend a lot of time in foreign policy and still have bad judgment. You have people that, you know, they may go to a lot of movies and are lousy movie critics. I mean, it's a situation where just because you had a lot of experience doesn't automatically make you a great judgment in you. It can be helpful in creating judgment, but it doesn't automatically guarantee that. So when you do see him stumbling around and Joe Lieberman has to be whispering in his ear, as they did at that one press conference, it makes you nervous because he is, you know, staking his claim saying, I am the expert on this. And then he's stumbling around in something that is not insignificant. They're killing each other over Sunni and Shia, and he's confusing it.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Stubb?
Well, you know, what can I say about that? I mean, the guy's had two slips of the tongue here on two very, you know, I don't know what to say. He's not just claiming to have experience. I mean, I don't think anybody can really debate that John McCain is better prepared to discuss a wide range of national security issues. I mean, really, and that even shows in the poll that we're going to be talking about later, is that people really look to him as the expert of the three, anyway, on those particular policies. So, you know, that he goofed up two words at two different press conferences, I just think that's nitpicking. And if that's all they can do to pick away at his record as being the stronger candidate on national security, well, that I think he can sustain that.
Yeah, let's get another caller in. Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Joy, and everybody. On General Petraeus' hearings in front of Congress brought out a lot of things that I did suspect. Some of the legislators even questioned where the oil money was going, which our leaders have been very reluctant to talk about. NBC TV one night said about a third of the oil was getting stolen. And last night on public TV, Lisa Marganelli, who wrote a book, Oil on the Brain, said that sometimes even an oil tanker gets stolen. So I'm saying, why should our soldiers die over who's going to get the oil, even if it gets stolen?
All right. Kathy Stepp?
Well, the soldiers aren't over there dying over oils being stolen. I'm not sure where that caller was going. But, you know, our country was attacked, and we're facing an enemy that, you know, runs on terror tactics. And that's really what we're trying to do, is to try and establish, first of all, to stabilize that part of the world, because we do have vested interests in oil supplies. That's very true. But to simplify it down to say that, you know, our soldiers are dying for oil, I'm sorry. I just really strongly, fundamentally disagree with that.
Does it disappoint you, Kathy Stepp, that we heard in those hearings that the oil profits in Iraq were, you know, in a bank somewhere while the U.S. Is footing the bill for all the reconstruction and such?
I have always thought that Iraq should be paying more for what is going on over there as far as liberating their citizens. So absolutely, I've always thought that. And it is disturbing that oil is being stolen. We don't know who's stealing it. We have no idea. I mean, some of these stories are just too topical. You really do need to dig underneath. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the insinuation is, if it's, you know, which governments are taking it. But, you know, there have been very corrupt regimes running that country. And you can see that by how richly Saddam Hussein and his family lived, while, you know, many of his citizens were in dire poverty, not the kind of U.S. poverty that we talk about, but, I mean, real, you know, living on the dirt streets poverty. So, you know, I just think sometimes we have to kind of dig a little bit deeper than just the headlines of NBC News.
Okay, well, yeah, I think the caller had a very good point. The caller's point was pretty clear, and that is there's a lot of corruption going on there, and there was corruption, as Kathy pointed out beforehand, with Saddam Hussein, and then we came in and we probably created more corruption. We had, when Bremer was there, when Paul Bremer was there, for example, we shipped $4 billion in cash over there. Now, there was no accountability on that. They don't know where the money went. There's also billions of other dollars, tens of billions, actually, of other dollars that they cannot account for. It's tremendous corruption. You have all these no-bid contracts going on. You have money disappearing. You have I think the caller's question is very reasonable, is saying that if we're going to be sending, you know, our precious soldiers over there, at least the administration can try to clean up the corruption within this administration.
We are going to take a short pause. This is The Week in Review, talking with Louis Fortas. Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee, and Kathy Stepp, a former Republican state senator, talking with us about all of the political news this week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll join Ben Marins this afternoon for At Issue with Ben Marins, and call in after 4 o'clock with what you think is the week's most significant news story. It's your views on the news after 4. We're talking about the most significant news stories of the week. Spent much of the program so far on General David Petraeus' testimony before Congress this week on the status of the situation in Iraq and his recommendation to pause troop withdrawals from Iraq. And President Bush going along with that yesterday, ordering a suspension of further troop withdrawals. Well, we'll take a couple more calls on Iraq and the testimony, and then we're going to move on, though, because we have other news from the week to talk about. Our next caller is Ned in Wausau. Hi, Ned. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to mention a few things from this week as far as the Iraq war. I think that the cost of the war is finally getting a little more publicity. It has been discussed a little in the past, but not as much as I feel that it should receive. And not just the 4,000 lives, which is 1,000 more than died on 9/11, or the 30,000 wounded. We've talked about that before, but now we're looking at the decades of care that is going to be needed for the wounded. And also the fact that Afghanistan is getting worse, and we're going to need more troops there. And it's not a retreat. We're going to have to take some of the Iraqi troops and put them into Afghanistan, but certainly not all of them. Now, this week, Obama talked about a peace and what is victory, and I thought he did a very good job of that. We've got to reconsider and really think about what is an acceptable peace in Iraq. And we're not going to achieve a perfect peace for, at least according to him, and I think this is really a conservative estimate, 20 to 30 years. And the reason that would be the case is that would be a stable government in Iraq that's actually supported by the majority of the people. Right now, Karzai does not have a majority support by the people there. But the point is, we need to be able to accept a peace that is going to have some flare-ups from time to time, and we're going to need to be able to support the green zone as it is now. But as far as the entire country is concerned, I don't see us in a major 140,000 troop level. I think we can get down to maybe 30 to 50,000 troops, and there's no way we're going to be able to go to zero troops.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Ned. Do you think that's the case, Louis?
I think the caller made some very valid points.
Yeah. Kathy Stepp?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's everybody's goal is to get as few troops or to have as few troops as possible from America over there as possible going forward. Yeah, absolutely. I think you make some very good points. It's very, very costly to run a war anywhere, so obviously the cost is significant, and I think some of the future goals that he talked about are fair.
Yeah. Dave in Wanakee, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. First thing to say is sometimes it's better to be silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. That said, I'd like to say I have a plan for getting us out of Iraq, one that I think should satisfy both of your guests. What we should do is set up a referendum so that the Iraqis choose us either to stay or to leave. And if they choose us to stay, they can choose us to stay for 5 years, 20 years, or 100 years. And if they choose us to leave, they could ask us to leave in 2 years, 1 year, or 6 months. And do you think they'd giving us the purple finger and telling us to leave, or do you think they'd say stay?
Kathy Stem.
Well, when you hear stories from soldiers who have actually been over there and who have interacted at great length with a lot of the citizens there, I think the women and the children would be very appreciative of what we have done over there, especially the women, being liberated, being able to become educated, being able to go out and start businesses and have jobs and walk in the streets without fear. And I think that they would be very appreciative and supportive of that going forward. And I would imagine that the fathers of the children would be appreciative of that too, that there aren't their kids being abducted off the street by Saddam and his sons and some of the parts of his regime that would, you know, kidnap people and murder them. So I think they'd be very appreciative of that, and that they like the stability that they're feeling lately on their streets.
Louis Fortas.
Well, I think that now that we've broken the system and it is totally chaotic and totally violent, yeah, I think that if I were living there, I'd like somebody there who's hopefully going to provide some law and order and train my police and train my military and give me some safety, because, you know, everybody, when it comes down to it, I mean, people just want to live a basic life. They want to raise their family, they want to have a job, and they want to be able to do that without fear of getting killed. So sure, at this stage of the game, I think if I was an Iraqi, and I think most Iraqis would want something, some kind of security. But we need to start phasing out and training Iraqis, because we can't be the target there. As long as we're there, we're a lightning rod, and we need to train them, get out, or as I believe the caller said, you know, we're going to reduce our strength to maybe 30,000 or whatever, it's fine. But just be low-key, you know, and be there if necessary, but don't be all over the place like we are now. We can't continue that.
Yeah. All right.
Look how much we agree on.
I know. I mean, last time we were on, it was like a love fest.
I mean, I know, but we are agreeing actually more than we're disagreeing. It's just some of the semantics of it. So, see, we can do it.
Well, here's some agreement from Barack Obama joining Hillary Clinton and urging President Bush to boycott the opening ceremonies of the Summer Olympics in Beijing over all of the over China's human rights policies and record and all of the protests this week as the torch relay is going on, some chaotic protests in London and Paris and San Francisco this week. Should the president boycott the opening ceremonies, Louis Fortas?
Well, first of all, I applaud all the demonstrators. I think China is not ready for prime time. I mean, they are a dictatorship. They are very repressive, very rough. They've been the biggest obstacle in preventing the genocide that's going on in Darfur, because they trade with Sudan. So they've been bad actors, very, very bad actors on the world scene. And I definitely would not want to see us pull out of the Olympics, because the athletes have really, you know, worked extraordinarily hard and prepared for this and should have every chance to compete. But I do think boycotting the opening ceremony would be a diplomatic, a very strong diplomatic message. I mean, before Kathy speaks, let me say, I mean, the conservative Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, is going to boycott, and Sarkozy in France is talking about boycotting, another conservative. So this isn't some wild liberal scheme here. This is, I think, a nice diplomatic kind of gesture to say, we do not approve of many of your human rights policies.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Stepp.
Well, I'm going to surprise Louis again and agree with him that, you know, I think that that does send a message. I guess I always like to think things all the way through to the end, though. and to say, so what will that do to change China's behavior? I mean, I don't know that anyone really has any expectations that Sarkozy and some of the other world leaders boycotting the open ceremony is going to change China's leadership's role on human rights. It is abysmal, and we are really, along with other countries, really in bed with the Chinese on business when it comes to supporting their industries, and American companies are really suffering for it, which is a shame as well, besides the human rights issues, which are certainly out there in full color. So, I agree. I think it would be a good thing to do is to stand and give that message politically, but to what end? It's not going to change anything.
I mean, for a moment ago, you were so optimistic about us getting along here, and I thought your optimism would extend beyond a conversation. I do think that China is very sensitive to public opinion. I think China is trying to integrate itself more and more in the group of civilized nations, and they, I think, you know, it's not going to change anything overnight, but it's a form of pressure, and we have to just keep pressuring them. And this is the way you do with diplomacy, as opposed to just, you know, going in Iraq as we did and just, you know, crushing them. I think this is a situation where let's just keep trying to do it in a civilized, diplomatic way.
Let's switch to this issue. The House yesterday voted to delay action on a Colombia free trade pact. This does not make the White House or President Bush happy. He wanted Congress to pass the legislation, put it on the fast track, and now it's delayed. And should it be, Louis Fortas, should we delay this Colombia Free Trade Pact?
I think so. I think that if you look back at a lot of these free trade pacts where they'd say, well, there's all kind of problems, but we'll fix it afterward, just pass it. Well, it's never been fixed afterward, number one. Number two, Colombia is a totally corrupt country. And the reason that we're dancing around with Colombia right now is we've alienated all the countries around it, and it is the only one. Uribe is very, very conservative guy. They have death squads there. It's a nasty, dangerous country, but it's kind of our only ally in that area, and so the administration is trying to throw them a bone, and I think Congress is looking at it a little more realistically and rationally, saying, wait a second, I mean, this is not going to benefit United States in a lot of ways and U.S. workers, and it needs, if we're going to move forward with this, this thing needs to be reworked.
Mm-hmm. Kathy?
Well, I guess I'm a little more cynical in the reason behind Congress postponing it. To me, it just seems more about the presidential election coming up and the discussions about free trade agreements with other nations that have been difficult for Senator Clinton and Senator Obama to explain their positions. And in fact, they've been kind of contradicting themselves behind the scenes, whether through campaign people talking in place of them or so on. So, you know, I think it's just more about that, frankly, than I think about the policy of it. So I guess I'm just a little more jaded.
What about Hillary Clinton's campaign consultant, who was demoted this week because he was working with Colombia, pro-free trade with Colombia, and his own candidate was against this free trade pact. Louis Fortas, was that a big deal for the Hillary Clinton campaign?
Well, Penn played a pretty significant role, a real significant role. So, yes, it was a big deal. I just think he exercised poor judgment. And my understanding is that when George Bush hired Karl Rove, he said, you know, pull away from all these your other clients. And I think Penn is running a big operation. He's a very prominent lobbyist, policy person in Washington. And I think that he it was just kind of poor judgment, and I was disappointed. I don't think it's any reflection on Hillary Clinton. It's more just he exercised bad judgment when this got out. She did the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kathy, anything on that?
Well, that was actually my point, Joy, was that, you know, here was Hillary now caught in a similar situation as Barack was in discussions with Canada. So, I mean, it does, unfortunately for the candidates, shine a acquisitive light on them, if nothing else. And people start asking, well, what do they really believe? And I think that's important to voters as we get closer to the election, as people are going to be going, well, what do these people really stand for? And their base wants to know that, as do the general public wants to know, where are they really on these issues? And when things like this happen, when you have people inside the campaigns that are pretty high level directly contradicting what the candidate's saying out on the trail at certain stops, that's a problem.
Now, wait, I just to set the record straight, what the candidates believe in is what the candidates say, and they say consistently. The fact that they have somebody working for them that exercised poor judgment and had a conflict of interest, that's not what the candidate, that doesn't change what the candidate is saying. The candidate is saying one consistent message. And so your question of how do people know what the candidate stands for? You simply listen to the candidate, and when they consistently say the same thing over and over again and don't contradict themselves, then that's what they believe.
That's true, when they don't contradict themselves.
And she didn't.
If we go back to the incident that I talked about with Barack, talking about with Canada, and, you know, while Barack is here campaigning in certain parts of the country, there was a little bit of a different message than, you know, and then the wink and the nod, don't worry about what he's saying right now. You know, it's just that right now we're in the campaign season, but, you know, when you need him to be there, he'll be there.
No,
and that's something that really does, all I'm saying is that it creates doubt in the minds of the public, that not the inside baseball people, maybe like you, who pay much more attention to the detail. But I think in the general election, it raises questions for the candidates. It's difficult to overcome.
We're going to talk more presidential politics in just a moment. I need to take a short pause. We'll take a look after this break at the results of the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College Survey Center poll on the presidential race in Wisconsin and the issues that are important to us in the presidential race, and other news from that survey and Wisconsin coming up. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review. It's 12 minutes before 9 o'clock, after 9, John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn, talking more with his guest about President Bush saying he will suspend U.S. troop withdrawals from Iraq this summer, but also cut the length of tours of duty. More on that coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about all the political news from this week, nationally, internationally, and here in the state of Wisconsin. Our guest today, Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee, and Kathy Stepp, former Republican state senator. And we welcome your thoughts on news from Wisconsin during the last segment of the program. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. But some of the state news has a national twist in that Wisconsin Public Radio and St. Norbert College, the survey center at St. Norbert, releasing the spring 2008 survey results. Among the many results, we found out that Wisconsin voters at this point in time have no clear favorite in the presidential race. It shows that Democrat Barack Obama would perhaps beat John McCain with 46% of the vote to 42% of the vote. Hillary Rodham Clinton would lose to McCain by the same margin. However, both victories are within the polls' margin of error. So this means it's neck and neck. John McCain is pleasing about half of the voters in the state of Wisconsin. Louis Fortas, what do you think about that?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important that you stress what you did, that it's all within the margin of mm-hmm. error. So you basically have what we all know that we have in Wisconsin as a very much a swing state, a very close state. If you look at the last two presidential elections, I mean, they were decided by you know, less than 10,000 votes, and I think mm-hmm. the first one was 5,000 or whatever. So, I mean, we know that no matter what's going on, the races are going to tighten up as November gets closer. And so I think that as soon as the Democrats settle on a candidate, you'll have a better sense of a matchup, because right now it's still a little vague as to who McCain will be running against.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Kathy Stepp.
Yeah, I actually agree that, you know, it
Could
is
you quit agreeing with me?
I know. Now we're going to get boring, Lewis, and nobody's going to call in anymore. So I better spice it up a bit. But what I was going to say is just that, yeah, it is indicative of the makeup of the state politically. It's just about a 50-50 state. I was actually surprised McCain did as well against Obama at this point as he is. And I think the trending of polling is going to be more demonstrative of where his position is really going to be come Election Day. So just a snapshot at this moment, I don't know that that's as strong as the Democrats need to be looking right now. I mean, if this is really an anti-Republican year like everybody's, probably most of your listeners are hoping it is, I'm kind of surprised that McCain's doing so well. So I think that's something the Democrats need to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm. When will the Democrats settle on a nominee, do you think, Lewis?
Super Tuesday? No, excuse me, we missed that date. I hope it's before the convention. I would hope that once all the primary and caucuses are over, and I would hope that at that point the superdelegates would begin to show their hand, and I would hope that whoever is behind at that point and after the all the committed they're in and the super delegates have shown their hand, that person would back out of the race and we would go to the convention and not have a fight at a convention. I saw what happened in 1968 and it wasn't pretty. And so I would like to see going into the convention that we have a candidate.
Mm-hmm. The other one of the other things in our poll showed that the economy was the most important issue in the presidential race among the Wisconsin voters, those we contacted for this poll, followed by the war in Iraq, but the economy was by far the most important issue. That doesn't surprise you, I bet, Kathy Stepp.
No, it doesn't at this point in the campaign, Joy. I mean, you know, as we go forward and people start really evaluating more of what is the role of the President of the United States, what's his primary responsibility, and really that's keeping our nation safe. I mean, national security is something that we really can't gamble on. I mean, without a strong leader there, we're not going to have the luxury of worrying about health insurance rates or environmental policies or job creation. I mean, that's the reality of it. And looking at the poll and spending some time looking at it, John McCain clearly dominates the Iraq war, national security, Iran, taxes, the budget, Social Security, those types of issues that are really, I think, going to start to gel more as we get closer to November. He really dominates where he's right in there with Barack when it comes to the economy snapshot today.
Yeah. Of course, we did point out that you can add up the two Democrats because we had two Democrats versus one Republican in that poll.
Okay, because that's what I was going to point out is that this poll is done in such a way that if you look at McCain's numbers, for example, on the Iraq War, which is supposedly his great strength, 46% say McCain, but if you add the Hillary and Barack, you're at 44%. So, and seven are not sure, and one refused, and whatever. So, but the situation is, you have McCain versus two Democrats. So if you, again, combine the Democrats, that does not necessarily say that everyone supporting Barack and Hillary are going to automatically vote for the other person. But let's assume that since Barack and Hillary's position on the war are a lot closer than either one of those to McCain's, that if you did have when we do get a single candidate, that it will be very close on the Iraq war. It will be, and I think once you get beyond that, I think McCain wins on national security with 52%. But after that, when you start combining the Democrat versus McCain loses on every other category and loses very significantly, for example, on the economy, where he has 29% and the combined Democrats have 56%. So it's you know, if you look at the issues, other than I say one, and I guess two actually with Iraq war and national security, no, the Democrats are doing very, very well.
You know, go ahead, Kathy.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Joy. Yeah. I just did want to comment. It really isn't fair to do that because there are many, many stories that have been done about people who are supporting either Hillary or Obama have said that if their guy doesn't get in, that a lot of those people would swing over to McCain. And so it really isn't. I agree with you that the way the poll was done and how the data was separated out isn't really a clear picture. It should have just been plainly McCain versus Hillary and then a separate thing, you know, McCain versus Obama. I just think it would have been a little bit more fair to do it that way. But to be able to combine two candidates and put their score up against mm-hmm. one, it really doesn't give us a picture. What the real picture is how many independents is McCain attracting versus Clinton and Obama. And unfortunately for the Democrats, I think right now McCain's doing a better job.
Let's turn it a
we
little...
We shall see.
Let's turn it a little light. I want to know... we also asked what's the most important problem facing the state of Wisconsin, and the top answer is always taxes in our poll. But just for a change of pace, we asked what is the best thing about Wisconsin, and that was kind of fun because people thought that our environment, our outdoors, our scenic natural beauty, and yes, even our four seasons and the winter that we just had, the best thing about Wisconsin. Louis Fortas, what's the best thing about Wisconsin?
Well, I'm enjoying this because the one that has the highest number of all the responses is the weather. And after this winter, it's just phenomenal that people can respond like that. I wasn't born in Wisconsin. I moved here when I was a senior in high school. And Wisconsin I see it as just more genuine. I mean, I think people are more sincere, are more unpretentious. I went to graduate school, and I taught at one of these, quote, Eastern colleges. And there's a lot of pretension, a lot of whatever. I just find Wisconsin people real, real genuine. There's pluses and minuses to that, but I think on one hand, it's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. Kathy Stepp, the best thing about Wisconsin?
Oh, I would definitely say our natural resources. I mean, we have a little place that we own in northern Wisconsin that we really, really enjoy. And there's just nothing like being out on the pontoon boat fishing, and, you know, the surroundings are breathtaking. So I do think that's one of our greatest assets, and it is something that our citizens appreciate as well. So that's what I'd say.
Well, you know, we were going to talk about the Great Lakes Compact and the bipartisan agreement that was reached this week, the governor announcing it. We don't have time, but we will have that as the focus of our state capitol report on Monday. So Monday between 7 and 8 on the state capitol report, we'll talk all about the Great Lakes Compact. Louis Fortas, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy, and thank you, Kathy.
And Kathy Stepp, thanks a lot. Former Republican state senator and Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thanks to Christina Taylor for on-air production. Thank you for listening. And let me leave you with some of the best things about Wisconsin from singer-songwriter Peter Leedy.
In the wintertime, Wisconsin was made for you and me. We are the home of Laverne and Shirley. We got Sheboygan. Hey, we got Hurley, we got cheese, brats, beer, it's all right here. Wisconsin was made for you and me.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.